We'd like to welcome everyone out today. We're going to get started with our first speaker this morning. So our first speaker is Petronella Adamako, who is an infectious disease specialist. She completed her residency at Good Samaritan Hospital in Baltimore. She did an infectious disease fellowship then at Tulane. She's board certified in internal medicine and infectious disease, and she's currently working in McKady Hospital as the director of infection prevention and antimicrobial stewardship. Prior to coming to the Ogden area, she worked for 8 years in hospital practice and clinical practice at Northwest Indiana. She's a member of the Infectious Disease Society of America and the American College of Physicians. And so she's going to speak to us this morning about what's new in infectious disease. So let's welcome Dr. Adamako.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you all for making it to the lecture this morning. This one is off? Okay. So I was asked, I'm going to talk about latent TB infection, basically updates and in the diagnosis of that. It's been around for a while, and I wouldn't say it's more of an update. I'll just say it's more of a review of latent TB infection. I have no financial disclosures to make. And the format of this morning's talk is going to be the objectives would be, one, to review the basic epidemiology of latent TB, and then to talk about the updates and the diagnosis of latent TB infection, and then also to mention the updates in the treatment of latent TB infection. So just a brief summary of tuberculosis. Tuberculosis is still a worldwide pandemic, and it is a highly contagious and fatal disease. It is caused by the organism Mycobacterium tuberculosis, which belongs to the group Mycobacterium tuberculosis. It is transmitted by the airborne route or via inhalation. And when one first gets exposed to the bacteria, one develops the primary tuberculosis, which is just a mild pneumonic self-limited disease. So most people are not even aware that they may have acquired TB at that time. It then moves on to the latent TB infection stage, and some people can go on to develop the active TB disease. And treatment is a combination of drugs used over a period of time. It's usually about 6 months for active TB and longer than that for latent TB infection. So a brief talk about the epidemiology of TB. I decided to do it global, US, and then statewide. So the global situation is that about a third of the world's population is infected with TB. That is latent TB, active TB. And with latent, about this number, 9 million people are known to develop the disease every year, out of whom about 2 million die from the disease. TB and HIV. HIV infects about 36 million people in the world. It's the leading cause of, is the leading infectious disease cause of death in the world. And a third of these individuals are infected also with latent TB. And as you can see, because of their impaired cellular immune system, they have a higher tendency to go on to develop active TB disease. We now have the situation of multi-drug resistant TB that we have to deal with. And that is also estimated to affect about 300,000 people in the world. In 2012, they had 85,000 confirmed cases of multi-drug resistant tuberculosis. And it's found in virtually every area that the World Health Organization surveyed. So in the US, in 2013, they had 9,588 confirmed cases of active TB disease, which was a decrease from the previous year. So the current rate in the US is about 3 per 100,000. And as mentioned, the rates decreased in both the foreign and the US-born patients or individuals. You can see that the rates, however, were high. The decrease was higher in the US-born compared to the foreign-born. In the foreign bond, most of the cases appear to come from China, Philippines, Vietnam, India, and Mexico. So you have to take that into account. The rates are still about 13 times higher in foreign-born patients or individuals compared to the U.S.-born. And the goal of TB elimination for the U.S. is to have less than one case per a million. So down to Utah. In Utah in 2012, the rate was 1.2 per 100,000. In 2013, it was 1.1 per 100,000. It appears that Salt Lake County has the highest incidence of cases. In 2012, they had 55%, but in 2013, they had more than 60% of the cases. The rate for our county is now 2 per 100,000. They had a total of 4 cases last year. So latent TB infection, what is the definition or the diagnosis? This is when an individual has evidence of having been exposed to Mycobacterium tuberculosis. And this is by a positive tuberculin skin test or a positive interferon gamma release assay. Now, this individual should not have any signs or symptoms of TB disease, which would be the constitutional symptoms of fever, weight loss, night sweats. If it's pulmonary TB, you're worried about cough, hemoptysis. We don't expect the individual to have any of these signs. The individual should also have a normal chest x-ray. And the rationale or the reason for this is that when one is first exposed to the bacteria, the individual is able to control the bacteria, keep it under control, but is not completely able to eradicate it. And therefore, the bacteria is still persistent, are still alive, basically, in the individual. And as mentioned from the epidemiology, you can see that active TB, the diseases of TB or the active TB cases that we see is just the tip of the iceberg. We have a huge reservoir of individuals with latent TB infection. In the US, it's estimated that 11 million people have that, out of whom 10% will progress to go on to develop active TB disease. So the goal is to make sure that we target those with latent TB infection so that we can decrease the reservoir and thereby decrease the incidence of active TB disease. And of those who would go on to develop the disease, 5 to 10% are expected to develop the active TB disease within 2 years of infection. So this is just a brief slide that shows how the progression of the disease. So when one first is exposed to the bacteria, as mentioned, you acquired by inhalation, and then you have a mild primary, you have the primary TB, which is basically a mild pneumonic illness. You have lymphadenopathy, you may have hilar lymphadenopathy, and then you have subpleural infiltrates, which is called the Gorham's complex. And individual develops skin test conversion within 6 to 8 weeks. You have spontaneous healing within 6 months, and then you have the patient is now in the latent TB phase. In some individuals, as mentioned, 5 to 10% of cases, you can progress within 2 years to active TB disease. Some people just continue straight ahead to go and develop the disease within 2 years again. And in HIV patients, you can get continuous progression again to develop the TB disease. So it's thought that we can prevent TB infection by using vaccines. We try to prevent most infections by vaccination. So far, they haven't been able to come up with a very good vaccine for TB. The one around is still BCG vaccination. It is not very effective in preventing active TB disease, but it does decrease the incidence of miliary TB and tuberculosis meningitis. It is basically a live attenuated vaccine of the Mycobacterium bovis, which is in the same group as Mycobacterium tuberculosis. The duration of protection is believed to be about 10 to 15 years, and it may contribute to a positive tuberculin skin test. So it's recommended. The CDC guidelines say that testing should be targeted. So you want to test people who you believe are at high risk of having latent TB infection. And you want to test people who are at also high risk of progressing to active TB disease if they have latent TB infection. In that case, that means that you want to identify, evaluate, and then treat once you confirm that the patient is positive. So who are those at high risk of having latent TB infection? They are foreign-born immigrants, like me. And then those who are at high risk of developing active TB disease from latent TB, these are individuals who are immunosuppressed. So our HIV patients, patients with diabetes, patients with silicosis, patients on hemodialysis, they are all at high risk of developing active TB disease once they have the latent TB. And then there are also the individuals who may have been exposed to patients with active TB. So you have patients or individuals or employees of healthcare facilities, prisons, jails. So patients or the general population should not be tested if they are at no risk at all of acquiring latent TB infection. So the two tests available have been, at least Mantu test has been around for hundreds of years, or at least more than 100 years. It's the Mantu tuberculin skin test, or from now on known as the TST or the Mantu test. And then we have the interferon gamma release assays. So the tuberculin skin test, that is basically done by taking 5 tuberculin units of the purified protein derivative. It's in 0.1 cc's of fluid. It's injected into the volar aspect of the forearm. It has to be intradermal. And when it's done correctly, it produces a wheel of about 6 to 10 millimeters. The injection site has to be read within 48 to 72 hours. It is read across the diameter of the arm, and it is the induration and not the erythema that is read. So when you have a positive test, you can read it up to 7 days. But if it's a negative test, it should not be read beyond the 72 days. So what are the results of the tuberculin skin test? If you have an induration greater than or equal to 5 millimeters, it is considered positive in all these individuals. So immunosuppressed patients who are organ transplant patients, they've been on 15 milligrams of prednisone for more than a month, and patients on tumor necrosis factors inhibitors. Patients with fibrotic changes or scarring on the X-ray consistent with the previous infection with TB are also considered positive if they have the induration greater than 5 millimeters. HIV patients greater than 5 millimeters, and patients with recent exposure to known individuals with active TB disease are also considered positive at 5 millimeters. 10 millimeters for immigrants within 5 years of coming into the country, residents or employees of health high-risk facilities such as hospitals, prisons, jails, IV drug users, and those at high risk of progression to the active disease. Those with diabetes mellitus, silicosis, lymphoma, renal failure on hemodialysis. Children below the age of 5 years, and then again, those who've been exposed to adults in the high-risk category. So those with no risk factors at all are then considered to be positive if their duration is greater than or equal to 5 millimeters. So interferon gamma release assays, they have been around since the early 2000s. The way it works, or the rationale behind that, is TB has some proteins in there. The proteins, and when the body or the cells are exposed to these proteins, they produce interferon gamma, and that is measured. So just a brief diagram to show you how it works. The proteins that are used in this case are the ESAT6 and the CFP10. They are used because they are specific to Mycobacterium tuberculosis. There are some other Mycobacterium that have them. I believe it's Kansai, Marinum, and another one. But it appears, it's used only for the testing of TB. We appear not to be too worried about confounding from those other Mycobacteria. So what happens is you have the antigen. You have the antigen-presenting cell that takes up or that combines the antigen being either the ESAT6 or the CFP10. And it processes the antigen and presents the antigen to the antigen-specific T cell over here. And once that absorbs it, it produces interferon gamma. And this is then measured. So we have two types of the IGRAs, or the interferon gamma release assays. These are quantiferon T TB gold in-tube test. These are FDA approved, and this measures the change in the concentration of the interferon gamma, and it's reported as either being positive, negative, or indeterminate. T-SPOT measures the change in the number of cells producing the interferon gamma. It's reported as either negative, positive, indeterminate, or borderline. So the sensitivity of the IGRAs, it's believed that it's about 80% in untreated culture-positive TB, and it ranges anywhere from 56 to 100%. But the QuantiFERON goal, they attest to the fact that in low-risk individuals, the sensitivity is about 99%. And in those with the risk, the sensitivity is estimated to be about 92%. But in all, it's similar in sensitivity to TST. The specificity is 99%, so that basically means that if the test comes back negative, it's very unlikely that your patient has TB infection. It is obviously not confounded by BCG vaccine because the two proteins that are used are not found in Mycobacterium bovis or previous exposure to non-tuberculous mycobacterium. So what are the indications for the IGRAs? It can basically be used in every situation where you can use the tuberculin skin test. It should be used in patients with a history of BCG vaccination, and you can also use it in contact investigations. In terms of treatment regimens, updates in terms of treatment, we have three regimens, or you could say four regimens. Isoniazid 300 milligrams that is used for 6 months or 9 months, rifampin 600 milligrams for 4 months, or rifampin and isoniazid for 12 weeks. First of all, isoniazid, 300 milligrams. It's basically the standard. They did studies where it was not used for 6 months and it was used for 12 months. And it was noticed that using it for 12 months, it didn't add any more success rate or efficacy to it. And there's also the issue about poor compliance or poor completion because of the long duration of treatment. So patients can be treated for either 6 months or 9 months with isoniazid. One, however, has to be worried about hepatotoxicity with that. So in the individuals at risk, you need to monitor their baseline liver test. The other treatment option is rifampin, that's 600 milligrams once a day. You use it for 4 months, and because of the short duration, you have a higher completion rate with that. However, the concern with drug interactions because it's of the CYP, is it 450 pathways, so you have to also closely monitor for that. Again, the estimated efficacy for that is about 93%. It's like that for all of them. And finally, the other regimen, which is relatively new, is isoniazid 600 milligrams and rifampin 900 milligrams. This is given weekly for 12 weeks. It's about 10 pills that you would have to take. For now, it should be a directly observed therapy. There's a higher completion rate, I guess, because of it being a directly observed therapy and the patient having to come back for follow-up for that. And of course, it's a shorter duration as well. Again, estimated efficacy is about 93%. So in terms of monitoring, we're talking about monitoring the liver function test because of the increased risk of hepatotoxicity. You do not have to monitor individuals who are relatively healthy and have no known liver disease. You can monitor only those with known liver disease, HIV infection, pregnant women, and alcohol abuse. So in summary, latent TB infection is still a pandemic. We haven't gotten it under control. Active TB disease is a second leading infectious disease cause of death. It's estimated to affect 11 million people in the USA. And if we are able to get to these individuals and treat them, we can thereby decrease the incidence of active TB. We need to perform targeted testing. That means that you need to test those at high risk of having latent TB infection. And you can use either IGRA or TST to diagnose it. Now, once you make up your mind that you are going to test this individual, that means that you are committing yourself to treating the patient. as a colleague would say, you have chronic patients, you have patients with hypertension, diabetes, mellitus, you have no problem putting them on treatment. But once it comes to latent TB, it appears that there's a little bit of a hesitancy putting them on treatment. And bear in mind that the treatment duration is relatively short. It's anywhere from 3 months to 9 months compared to hypertension and diabetes mellitus that could be lifelong. So again, testing means commitment to treatment. And you can also send them over. I can help you treat them. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Do you know what countries they still use the BCG vaccine? And once people have the BCG vaccine, should they be PPD tested?
Well, it's still used in the countries that have a high incidence of TB. So the middle income and the low income countries still use the BCG vaccine, because even though it may not be effective, it still decreases the incidence of miliary TB, tuberculosis, meningitis. And the recommendation now, because we have the IGRAS, is that you can, instead of using TSTs or the skin test in individuals with BCG vaccine, you should just go ahead and use the IGRAS. That's the interferon gamma release assay.
Okay.
So that you can overcome the confounding from the BCG vaccine.
Right. And just to follow up, the reason I ask, we get a lot of people going into becoming CRNAs or going into the medical profession, and it's required that they have a PPD. So we often do those, and then we find out that they had the BCG vaccine in the past. But how, in the past, when I've tried to order those other tests, they've been very expensive. Has the price come down for the blood test?
I am not aware of that. I believe it's still expensive, so it still has to be done. But again, because you're healthcare workers, it will be easier to convince them to take the medication if you're able to get the blood assay. Because it comes back, it's positive, you say that, okay, you still have it despite the fact that you were given the BCG vaccine, and that could convince them to complete the course of treatment.
And then one more question, sorry. Once someone has been treated for latent TB, if they've had the full treatment, do you test them, if they need to be tested, do they need to be tested in the future, down the road, if they work in a hospital?
I would say that so long as they have it documented that they tested positive and they had treatment, you don't need to test them again. It should be documented that it was positive and they had treatment. Now, if they have symptoms that would make one concerned about active TB disease, yes, you have to go through the whole rigmarole again.
And you would probably just go right to the blood test then?
Blood test. I wouldn't do the skin test.
Thank you.
But the blood test does not really become negative. You may have a decrease in the number of cells, or you may have a decrease in the concentration, but it does not always become negative.
In the past,
Pardon? Well, the idea, you could say this is this thing. I mean, by the time they come to us with the symptoms, they already have exposed the children to it, which is why one goes to the contact investigation. So ideally, the mother is supposed to wear the mask, or the patient is supposed to wear the mask to decrease the possibility of spreading it to their child. I mean, can you segregate? If possible, you could, but I'm not sure whether it's always feasible. And if you could also keep the patient in a situation where they would have 3 negative sputum smears before going home, that would also be convenient.
In the past, TB has been reported to be very class conscious. And also depression conscious. Is that still true?
I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you.
Oh. Can we turn the gain down on this thing a little bit? When I was in training, it was recommended that latent TB in middle class patients not be treated, whereas latent TB in impoverished people was recommended to be treated, simply because apparently latent TB almost never developed active disease in the middle class. And I'm wondering if this is still true?
You know, so long as you diagnose an individual as having positive or latent TB infection, you have to treat. You could say that the risk of developing, as I showed in the slide, the risk of developing or going on to develop active TB could probably be about 10%. But then you never know what could come up. You never know if you may end up requiring an organ transplant. You don't know if it could develop cancer. You don't know if it could develop a connective tissue disease where you end up being on TNFs. So once you have a positive test, you have to treat. And again, the treatment duration is relatively short. It's anywhere from 3 months to 9 months. The incidence of hepatotoxicity is relatively low as well. So I do not see any reason not to treat. I don't think there's any class distinction nowadays. Nowadays, everyone who gets tested should be treated.
I see. Thank you.
So do you see any rapid tests around the corner for TB? There's rapid malaria tests. There's rapid HIV testing now within 10 minutes. Do you see that happening in TB? And if so, is it going to be affordable?
It's possible because now they have a rapid test for multi-drug resistant organisms. If the organism is resistant to rifampin, they have rapid test for that. So I think that, yes, those tests are around the corner. Is it going to be affordable? Probably not in the beginning. But when it's been around for a while, probably.
On the first day of medical school in 1980, my children were 10 and 11, and I did the only sociopathic act. I pilfered 4 TB tests, tuberculin tests, because I was so excited to give my first injection. And I gave my injections. I thought I did it perfectly. And 2 faculty members' daughters, who are my kids' friends, almost got thrown out of medical school when they told their parents. But my daughter, my redheaded daughter, got a 12-millimeter wheal. And we all were tested, and she had no signs of TB, nor did any of us. And she's fine. She's now 45. Is she got tested again when her arm fall off?
No, she had no risk factors.
No risk factors.
And she was 10, 11.
Yeah.
So that means
I put her on 9 months of isoniazid. they said you could change during puberty, and I showed them the wheal. I mean, I couldn't have done anything wrong to have made a wheal come up, right? I did it 4 times to the 4 kids.
4 boosters, huh? Okay, so she had no risk factors with her age. Her induration should have been 15 or more. So, because again, you have the non-tuberculous mycobacterium that could give you a positive PPD test. So with no risk factors, 15 millimeters is considered positive. So she was 12 millimeters.
I would like to test her again just to make sure 40 years ago I didn't do something wrong. Should she be tested again?
No, she does not need to be tested again if she has no risk factors. Now, if she's working in the healthcare industry, anything that makes you think that she has a risk factor.
So you wouldn't have treated her with isoniazid. I went to the Indian Health Center once a month.
You don't need to test her again, but if you want to, you can go ahead and get the IGRAs, not the BCG, but you get the blood test, the IGRAs. But you do not need to test her again unless she has the risk factors.
As a healthcare worker, I used to test myself every 5 years. Is that still recommended?
It's supposed to be every year.
Every year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. No other questions then. Okay.